Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, back from out of town, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
He's got a lot to be embarrassed about, guys. I know we talked last week that he was so, he lost that contest that we couldn't talk about. That's why he wasn't on the show last week. And now he's back.
What contest did I lose?
We don't talk about that. You know, you should be ashamed. So
got it.
That's why I hosted the show last week without him. You know, he wasn't allowed on the show.
Oh, he was banished. The excuse. I haven't listened to it.
Doesn't surprise me.
What were you saying?
Welcome back, guys. It's Masters of Modern, the real host of the show.
Hey.
He's not a goblin. He's Alex Kessler.
That wasn't my goblin voice. Goblin voice is Russian.
Got yeah, it.
Yeah, I am goblin. That
was more like nefarious.
Yeah.
You know, do you remember in Top Decking we made Nicol Bolas Russian?
Vaguely, yeah.
That was weird because the like person who did read the line wasn't didn't know who he was, and so it was just going off of the first name Nicol.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
So this is a modern podcast.
Yeah.
We talk about modern cards in the Magic: The Gathering universe.
Hyped,
super hyped. There's a lot of fun stuff going on.
Dominaria is tight AF.
Yeah, it's really fun. I played two pre-releases last weekend.
Me too.
Yeah,
I had to drop halfway through the second one because we had a meeting with my wedding planner.
I had to drop a match before the end of the first one, and I was 3-0. I was so bummed. I had a super sick deck.
My first deck was just great. Like, it felt like a constructed deck. I had, like, Sarah Angel. I just had, like, and Teferi is a card, and we'll talk about him later.
That was your
episode.
Jeskai deck that I looked at that I was like, this looks awesome.
I played Jeskai twice. Ugh. I can't not play Jeskai, but Teferi is just, like, Teferi impressed me a great deal. It felt like the most, like, playing with Jace I've had playing with Standard. Like, it was limited, so obviously a Planeswalker is overpowered, but he felt a lot like playing with Jace the Mind Sculptor did back in, or now, or, you know, generally, in the sense that, like, he comes down. If you need to, you can risk him a little bit more to get rid of a guy, or you can just start generating card advantage and locking your opponent out because you're untapping your lands and keeping up removal spells.
It's a really fun set. So today is the Modern set review. We're going to go through each card that we think is cool that has a potential impact on Modern. Really fun stuff that's going on right now. First of all, we have a sister podcast. They're called The Command Zone. They're on collected.company, but they also host a show on YouTube called Game Nights. Game Nights is this really cool Magic show.
Did someone we know happen to be on a most recent episode that came out this week?
I'm on Game Nights. It just premiered yesterday with me and Cassius Marsh, the defensive end from the San Francisco 49ers, returning guest. I played a Joyra deck. It's called Brawl. It's like a 60-card commander variant. It's really fun. You can go find that on YouTube. I had a great time, so thank you to everybody, all the fans, all the support. It's been a blast to see the comments and get to play some Magic. So that's a thing. But also, you know, just check out the Command Zone because they do great content. Jimmy and Josh over there on collected.company.
Consistently and wonderfully. Also, congrats to Jimmy. It was announced that he is now the lead of the next Sony Pictures animated animations movie, which is it's called Wish Dragon. It's him and Jackie Chan.
It's so
the main
cool
character.
It's so wild that him and Jackie Chan are going to be together in a movie.
He's also like, all of you are getting real buff.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not. I'm just getting fatter, but
I think you started there,
yeah, sure.
So like you're downgrading. But as Jimmy and like he's just like
right
guns
that picture.
Yeah, that picture.
Everybody's laughing.
Yeah.
One of the fans was like, "Jimmy, can you share your workout?" I was like, "That wasn't the point of this picture."
Well, because you're all next to like Cassius Marsh, who's like
big, burly
professionally
dude.
Meant to be
professionally buff.
Yeah, he's a football player.
Yes. So that's what's going on. That's the first wave of shoutouts. I think we're gonna get into the episode.
All right. So let's get into Dominaria. Well, before we get like into card by cards, what's your like feeling with the set? I mean, I know.
I think it's so cool.
Yeah.
This is. I mean, here's the thing about Magic, dude. Is like, you know, this game's been around for 25 years, and the early days of Magic, the first 10 years of the game, it's like. That's like the part of Magic that I really, really love, the Dominaria stuff. I mean, I think they did such a good job once they switched over and all the new places we've gone to, all the Planeswalkers and the Ravnicas and the Innistrads, like those are great sets and I have my total affection for those sets too. But like, I definitely feel like when I look back at Magic and I think about the things that drew me in and also the things that I feel so like nostalgic about, that's why Time Spiral is so special to me.
Sure.
And this feels in a lot of ways like it has those mechanics. It's not quite as deep in terms of keywords, but it has that feeling, which is awesome.
It has off the wall, you know, it has all the off the wall things that kind of are classic with any set that Richard Garfield is attached to.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we talked about this on the podcast. I think it's something I did on Twitter, but I like found the list of every set that he's worked on. And first off, every set he's worked on is the most iconic set of that era.
Really?
He did Innistrad, which I would say of that era of Magic is the most iconic set of that era.
Yeah.
He did original Ravnica.
Which is super iconic.
He did
yeah.
Tempest.
Yeah.
He did Urza's Legacy, Urza's Destiny, all those guys.
Yeah.
That was like the era that he was still working there. He did the graveyard themed, the first graveyard theme, not the first one because Urza's
Legacy. Are you talking about the Torment?
Torment, yeah. He did Torment, the first Torment, the third set. So he did both of those, which are like... Of the sets on the list, they're probably the least beloved, but they're the most beloved by spiky or like ingrained draft players.
Right. Well, I mean, that's that set. So that's Odyssey, Judgment, Torment.
Yeah. So he did Odyssey and Torment were the two, and he advised on Judgment.
There's like very cool stuff that came out of those sets. I mean, that's where we got Psychotog. That's where we got Flashback the first time. There's a lot of cool stuff out of that set.
So
all
like
the Atog variants.
But yeah, so you know, this is a person who obviously created Magic, obviously Alpha, Antiquities.
Those are pretty iconic too. Yeah.
So you know, it just every time he's touched a set has been this kind of weird, awesome moment, and he's back, and I think he's done it again. You know, you can even see like just a bunch of people, especially in contrast to Ixalan Block, which people kind of disliked the draft format so much.
Right.
You have this like weird reversal where people are like, not only is this great, but I've been starved for a good draft format for a while.
Right.
Yeah, I'm super hyped.
Yeah, I'm super, super hyped. I mean, I really think that like just looking through the set, obviously, and this was fun because of the game nights thing. You know, I got to build my deck with those cards a little before everybody else. Mm-hmm. So I looked at the whole set. But what's really cool is because I was building for Constructed, I didn't really look at the limited cards. So playing in the pre-release, it really felt like I was looking at cards for the first time in a lot of cases.
When I always love limited, like the pre-release was always, to me, has always been a great bed for like figuring out which card is underrated. Like,
yeah.
That's where I like found Walking Ballista. Like I was at a pre-release, no one was talking about that card. I cast it once and I never lost.
Yeah, right.
Because it's bonkers. And it's like, and you know, that's where you found the Boros Reckoners of the world
right,
draft day, you know, on pre-release days where it's like, sometimes there's cards that just go totally under the radar that you get. And that's kind of where I'm at on Teferi right now. Like it was that good. It's just, it's gold. So its place in standard is going to be a little bit wonkier.
I had some pretty unbelievable interactions in my Dominaria limited stuff. Like, first of all, one card that I think is going to make a standard impact is the 4/4 for 4 in white black, the vigilance vampire thing, vampire knight. So it has two abilities on it. The one ability is white 2 and tap to make a 2/2 knight with vigilance. The other ability is black and tap to tap X untapped knights you control to destroy a creature with that power.
Did you play against it or play with it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's insane.
Oh, really? I played against it and wasn't impressed. He might not have enough knights to really make
I don't
it
even think
it.
You necessarily need the knights. I think what's so impressive tokens. About it is like, think about this. It's a 4/4 vigilance for 4. So 4/4 for 4 is a perfectly fine rate.
Sure.
Right? And it's vigilance, so it means that you can attack comfortably and also then use the ability after attack. So like your ability to attack, if they do something crazy, you hold up a mana, you can make a knight so it like replaces itself. Also the fact that like you can just attack and then like tap it with one and just kill like an X one.
Yeah, I guess the person who had it wasn't playing with it optimally.
Yeah, that card, I'm not saying that's going to be like a standard powerhouse, but I definitely wouldn't be surprised if that ends up in control decks as just like a strong mid-range card.
It reminds me a lot of the vampire from Innistrad.
Bloodline Keeper.
Yeah, Bloodline Keeper. Yeah. Okay, so beyond that, now what about the mechanics? Any like, you know, we have three main mechanics. The first one is Kicker, which
classic.
Yeah, classic mechanic. I mean, what's great about Kicker is that it allows you to kind of always mitigate Flood, so you can always kind of play with just a little bit more lands in your deck than you would normally expect to play.
Right.
There's some limited wise. There's some awesome ones. I was really impressed with the red Flashback one. It's not fly, but it lets you grab an instant or sorcery spell from your graveyard. If you flash it back, it's a 1/3. It's like a 1/3 for 2, and then for 6 mana, you can get a spell from your graveyard and put it in your hand.
Sure. Okay, yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
I had two of those in my first deck, and it was just like bonkers. But
yeah, Kicker's great. I mean, the freedom it gives you to play in the long game is always like so nice.
The second one is the Sagas.
That's like a new mechanic. It's a new card type.
It's cool.
Yeah. So they also look beautiful. They're really, really well-designed cards. I think they... I also, I mean, not only are they well-designed, but I think, like, they tell their stories, which is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea to have them represent these pieces of lore are, like, that's, like, where I got into the story. Like, that's, you know, I mean, I'm not, like, really big into Magic story, but, like, the sagas make me feel like I should pay attention. Mm-hmm. They do a great mm-hmm. job. That's, what's that, what kind of design is that? Is that top down? Is that top down?
Yeah, where we flavor...
Yeah, they favor flavor.
Designs the card versus mechanics yeah. design the flavor.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's like a great example of that working super well
yeah.
and getting my attention. And I'm not somebody who cares about that stuff.
Next is Historic, which is kind of related to sagas.
Yeah, and Historic's really cool. I mean, yeah. So Historic, right? So the deal with Historic is that artifacts, legendary spells, and sagas are all Historic. Now, sagas are a new card type, so that's Insular. That's part of this block. And legendary yeah. things are classic. Well, there's a lot of...
Originally, it was legendary. All sagas were legendary at one point.
Yeah.
And it was just legendaries and artifacts. And they changed it partly because the card typing, I think, got a little tight
yeah.
for sagas. But also, they found out that there's just... Sagas are better if there are a few that you can have multiple and play of the same one.
And then
limited needed that.
And then the last one is artifacts are Historic. And that to me is where they really struck gold with this mm-hmm. because I think legendaries, that's really cool. And sagas are great because it's when, you know, we're currently when we're in this block. But like the fact that now retroactively all artifacts are Historic is really fun. That's like one of Magic's great, great strengths over other games is that it has this history where everything is backwards compatible. So,
or it. I would say Magic is best when it's doing that because
yeah.
it doesn't always do that. For instance, arcane spells.
Yeah, but that's sort of what I mean is that yeah. that's when it's
Wizards
at its best.
Wizards learned their lesson in that. Yeah,
and so that's a great way for them to basically combine the new design with old design right. and make it so you get really excited. You're thinking, okay, well, all these things that trigger off Historic, how many artifacts can I think of that would work, you know, interactively with mm-hmm. this in Modern? Like that's a very cool thing.
Yeah, and I think that that's where a lot of these cards, the evaluation of them for Modern or older formats is going to be the most interesting, is like, how does this affect Modern when artifact counts that are powerful are much higher than Standard? And Standard even has a large artifact count because Kaladesh Block is still around.
Right.
I think that we have... One other thing. Legendary matter, but really legendary spells is the last one.
Right.
Thoughts?
On legendaries?
Yep.
I mean, I think they're fine. That's probably of the ones we just described. That's, I think, the weakest.
The legendary spells.
I just don't love the idea that these cards can be dead in your hand and uncastable if you don't have like a
but
legendary.
It's kind of like reverse of regular legendary, where like if I play with four Thalia in my deck and I have Thalia in play, the Thalia I draw is dead. This is if you play with this legendary spell in your deck, you need to have a legendary in play, otherwise this is dead.
Yeah, I think I would have just preferred, I would have been more excited about that type if it had some nominal effect you could play and then it becomes legendary if you control legendary.
Yeah.
Maybe that would have been more predictable.
I kind of wish, my thought was like legendary is just if you have another one in your graveyard, you can't cast it. But I guess like they didn't want to do that because of... It's hard to get stuff out of your graveyard on purpose.
Right.
And yeah. Of the spells, Urza's Blast, whatever, was... I think that's what it's called.
Urza's Blast?
Urza's...
What's Armageddon. The spell?
It's exile all things that aren't legendary.
Oh, okay.
It was epic. It was really good in my limited draft deck. I was actually impressed. I was impressed by the spells themselves and how not that difficult it is to cast. At least in limited, having a legendary is pretty easy. And like even looking at modern or standard,
yeah.
looking for cards to put into play, like because planeswalkers count, that's a pretty easy list to get kind of into play.
Yeah, big time. I mean, the planeswalker aspect is definitely something that increases the ability for these cards to be powerful. The powerful card that I played was Jaya's Immolating Inferno.
Okay.
It's like the red X spell. And in limited, that's just a total house.
Well, it's Fireball times three, right?
Times three. I mean, it's insane.
And, yeah, I think of those, the green one is the only one that every time I see it, I'm, like, really unimpressed by it.
Which what was
green
that?
Green one's the one that's, like, a bad, what's the, you know, X, green X, put... Reveal X cards, put everything that's a permanent X or less into play.
Oh, sure.
Because it's only creatures in...
It's like a semi Genesis Wave kind of.
Yeah, and yeah, Genesis yeah. Wave is just a better card versus all the other ones that they seem to be just very good for what they're doing. Like exile all non, like almost it can be built as a one-sided Wrath is like really good.
I have seen the Genesis Wave one we're talking about be good. I've seen it actually be powerful, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, and they're all powerful. I mean, like Time Walk is as a 6-mana thing is like. it's fine, yeah. but it's... Yeah,
Karn's okay. temporal sundering. The art on temporal sundering is amazing.
So what would... I think I have one big complaint for this set, oddly enough.
Yeah.
Do you have any big complaints for it?
No. I mean, okay. I think that one I mentioned, that the legendaries is probably the only thing that really stands out as like a little lame. And for the limited format, I do think that the more we play it, the more we're going to find that the limited format is like a lot of very, very like just like dink and dunk mid-range decks. It doesn't feel like there's a super aggressive deck that's easy to build.
But isn't that a good thing compared to... Like, Kaladesh was the opposite of that, where Kaladesh was hyper-aggressive. And I know there is an aggressive build out there of some of the color combos.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll find. I've only played, you know, two sealed pulls, so, like, I haven't even drafted it yet. But that's something I was noticing.
My biggest complaint is that there's, like, half tribal support in some tribes, but there's not enough to actually make it work. Like, Goblin Tribal in the set... There's four cards and or five cards and two of them are rare.
Yeah.
And like the other three aren't like necessarily that good with each other. So like why?
Yeah.
Like Goblin War Chief just seems like a dead card always.
Yeah. Like
what am I, unless I have Siege Gang Commander.
Well, I mean, I guess in theory that, you know, the next set, right? Because there's
it's an origin set. They're not origin. It's a core set. There's no Dominaria 2.
Oh, right. That's how it works now, right? We don't do blocks anymore.
Correct.
All
Which
sets
maybe
are...
the other thing I don't like about this set is I like
how
I'm
does it
sad
wait?
That this is the only Dominaria we're getting.
How does it work now? You get one set and then you get it's all large sets
there's,
now?
There's three large sets a year and there's one core set again.
That's right. It's so weird how they change this though
now,
because
core
like,
sets the sets a year can be sequel sets though. They just are never going to be drafted together again.
Got it.
So like if say we go to Ravnica.
Yeah.
Again, and they want to do all 10 guilds, they can do 5 guilds on one set and then 5 guilds on the next set, and you just wouldn't ever draft together, but they would
Got
they
it.
Can like you can do sequel sets still.
The point is they're not designed to be played together in limited. That's so what's so interesting is that like and we're I promise you guys we are going to get a set review in a second, but what's so interesting is that like every couple years they'll introduce like something new as far as the way they release sets or the way things come
Recently,
out.
Yeah.
It seems like every couple years they change it and then you're like, it doesn't make me trust anymore when they say this is how we're going to do things going forward, that's actually what it's going to be in 2 years. Makes me always feel like we're trying this out. We got rid of core sets. Okay. We're getting, you know, now the M sets are going to have new cards in them. Okay. Standard rotation's different. Okay. Two sets, three sets, large blocks. Like it's, you know what I'm saying?
Well, they did 6 years of M sets with new cards in it to pretty much a decent success. I think they just they are trying new things out and I'd rather them try new stuff than not, and we're just eventually I think they like realize there was a problem and they've been trying to figure out the best solution for it and they haven't succeeded yet,
right?
And this might be it. You know, I mean this is the easiestly the most obvious way to fix it, which is just we no longer have small sets were the problem. They never really worked. Standard can handle having more cards than we thought we could. Core sets were something that I think we still needed. A lot of people felt like when there were no core sets, it felt wonky. There's no place to like onboard stuff or reprint things in the standard very easily.
Right.
And just like it became kind of like there were problems that they were creating to solve problems they had.
Makes sense. I mean, I do miss the idea that we can have sequel sets.
That's like nothing in this set feels like it could be expanded upon.
Which is a shame because it's a great set.
But I think also one of the reasons this set feels so great is because they didn't save anything to be expanded upon.
Yeah, but I also think that,
they didn't,
you know,
like sandbag legendary sorceries.
It also does mean that like having a Dominaria set and having it be great means that in 2 years, if they want to come back and do another Dominaria, we'll probably be much more open to it because we'll have had one season with it.
Yeah, we didn't spend an entire year with it. Every place we go, we're going to be more up on board with.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gift and a curse to spend, you know, 6 months of the year on one place.
It's like fancy restaurant dining.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you like it more because you get less.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's get into our set review. Before we do, I want to remind everybody here, you can find us on Twitter, at the MMCast. You can find me at BenBit Media.
I am at Kes Wiley.
And you can find a couple other things that we have going on as well. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/the MMCast. That's where if you guys want to donate a couple bucks to us, it helps us do our thing. You know, with this device you're hearing us talk on, the video content that we keep talking about introducing, all of that comes from the donations that you guys help us with. And it's instrumental. It's the only money we make is the Patreon money. So please help us out there. It would be very helpful. And secondly, I do a show now for Wizardry Foundry called 10 Minutes of Modern. It's no longer on Anchor. It's a Facebook show. We are giving away free foils and currently a free foil Tarmogoyf. All you have to do is go check the content out, share it on your Facebook page, and enter your information at the Rafflecopter link in the description of the videos right now to be entered to win free stuff. So, and I give you guys just like daily modern content. I talked yesterday about Merfolk Trickster. And on Mondays, I give you reviews of what's going on over the weekend at the GPs. So check out that on Wizardry Foundry as well as their stuff if you want, you know, free daily content about modern.
Sweet.
All right, let's get into it.
All right. Let's start. We're going to do it in order of rarity. So let's start with Cabal Paladin.
Cabal Paladin.
Black 3.
Okay.
Creature Human Knight. Whenever you cast a historic spell, Cabal Paladin deals 2 damage to each opponent, and it's a 4-2.
Yeah, this card's fine. I mean, this card's sweet for limited.
If you play this, and then you just drop 3 Memnites, you do 6 damage to your opponent.
It's cost 4, though.
I mean, right, you win, like in an eggs deck, it's like another version of the red. You tap your artifacts to do 1 damage, but it's like much more explosive. Or in like an eggs deck,
yeah.
This is a much quicker win condition than anything else eggs was playing, which is kind of the thing that eggs needed, because it had, when it lost its engine, it wasn't able to go infinite basically. But now this means it doesn't have to be. You just have to play a 4-2.
I mean, I don't know, like it. Those decks don't really want a 4-drop as the thing they have to drop and then go off.
I mean, like, Clang Ironworks, I mean, technically the way they go off is a 5-drop.
Ironworks?
No, in Eggs, which is the second, well, not Second Sunrise, but the whatever.
Faith Reward, you mean? The 4-drop? Yeah, but nobody plays that deck anymore. That deck is bad.
Because it doesn't have 2 of that effect. Because it no longer can go infinite. The reason the deck died is because it can't. And people do play that deck. The amount of people that post that deck list on both of our groups.
Fair enough. I mean, I looked at this card. I was more interested in the historic that mills 2.
It is not that hard to drop 10 artifacts.
Yeah, I mean, I was more interested in the 1. I think it's a 1/3 that mills 2 every time you play a historic spell. Because you can play it earlier in the game.
So milling 2, say you get it on turn 3, they've drawn 10 cards. So that's...
No, I understand.
That's 25 artifacts.
You have to do it 3 times as many times. Well, that's not true. You have to do it.
It's 1 point. It's 2 point.
2.5.
Yeah, 2.5.
You have to do it 2.5 more times to win. Correct. I get it. But you can also play it on turn 2, which means that any engine you have going on.
Sure. Yeah. Unwind. Blue 2. Counter target non creature spell and tap up the 3 lands.
Yeah, so this is rewind, but 3 drop and negate.
Right.
It's fine. This isn't a thing.
You don't think the fact that untap lands?
I think like there's a possibility like that effect is always interesting to look at. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't think Modern's like hungry for this. Like Modern has so many efficient like interactive counterspells now that it just doesn't seem like it's going to push through. Could. I mean, it could. Mm-hmm. These effects are always impressive, and we do have bounce lands in Modern. So like maybe somebody will come up with some really clever way to like get ahead on mana doing this.
Sure.
But it doesn't strike me as a necessary effect.
Countering their own Abrupt Decay to make 6 mana off to 5? That seems bad.
You can't even. How can they counter their own Abrupt Decay?
Well, you can target it with Unwind, and Unwind will... Does it get fizzled and you don't untap your lands? Or
maybe.
Does it,
I don't know.
Just fail to counter.
Why Abrupt Decay? Where are you going with this? How did that happen?
It's just an uncounterable spell.
Oh, got
I mean,
it.
Pick a different uncounterable spell.
Got it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that works, though, because I think it fizzles.
It fizzles,
not,
and you don't
get the other effect.
Yeah, yeah, I think so, too.
Next is Grow from the Ashes. 2 green sorcery, kicker 2. Search your library for a basic land card and put it onto the battlefield, and then shuffle your library. If this spell is kicked, search for 2 basic land cards. The key to this, to me, is that they come in untapped.
Seriously, that's a big deal. I played this card a lot at the pre-release.
I've been like, and this is for standard, but I've been, you know, one of my great standard loves of all time was the Enter the Omniborg, where you play, you know, the Thrag Fire, you played like 8 Fog, Snapcaster Mage, Thrag Tusk, Sphinx's Revelation to like go infinite with an Omniscience, and you ramp. And
I
like,
remember you love that deck.
And right now, between this Teferi and Gilded Lotus.
Yeah.
You have 3 different 5-drops that all enter the battlefield and then have 2 plus mana available. So you can just like plan on being able to fog with those cards, which is interesting. But even in Modern, like being able to on turn 4 put a land into play and keep Remand open, and on turn 5 put 2 lands into play and keep 2 mana open for Remand seems like a thing that I have wanted to do in decks like Scapeshift historically.
Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, I had 2 of these in my first draft, in my first sealed deck, and I was blown away by how good it was.
Yeah.
It just feels like you're...
And in Modern, it's even better because you get a land for, you know, the most... There are a bunch of 1-drops that are really good at interacting with stuff. So you can, on turn 3, just get a land and be able to kill anything your opponent throws at you.
Right. Totally.
So...
Or play like Spell Pierce or something.
I was pretty impressed by it. Next, I have Sapperling Migration. This is green and 1 sorcery. Create 2 1/1 green Sapperling creature tokens. Kicker 4. If it was kicked, put 4 of those tokens in play instead. So it goes from 2 mana for 2 1/1s to 6 mana for 4 1/1s. The reason this is interesting to me is that there are a lot of all of the two mana make 2/1/1 tokens are like half playable, or even a little better than half, like 75% of a card. And depending on the tribal deck, especially, you know, if the tribe matters, it's actually playable.
Right.
And so this kind of being able to not only play it on that point, but then scale into four late game, so it's even a more powerful spell. You know, anytime you have kicker, being able to look at both sides is really important.
Right.
And the thing that's really important is when a card is good on the front end with a kicker spell, it's twice as important to kind of look at how powerful it is. And this is a decent card already.
Right.
And then you just sometimes you draw it on turn, you know, late game, and it's just a better card.
For sure.
Not to mention Slapperling Tribal is a thing. There are cards that are relevant that care about that, so that's even another layer.
Yeah, I do wonder if is there a Slapperling deck that we're not thinking of that's going to be obviously and immediately good now that the set has been printed?
I thought about it. There's a 2-mana Lord now for Funguses and Slapperlings.
Now in this set?
Yeah, it's 2-mana 2/2 that gives all Slapperlings and Funguses +1/+1. I posted a list on Twitter. It was one of the things I did on that airplane travel list I was making over the last few weeks. I'll get to that card, don't worry.
Okay, fair enough.
That's
so funny.
Rat Colony.
Oh, this card's sweet.
It's just Relentless Rats, but a 2-drop, and instead of getting +1/+1, it gets +1/+0.
Yeah, and it's the all aggressive version, but we all know the difference in modern between a 2-drop and a 3-drop and the significance there. So, like, I know that Relentless Rats becoming 5/5s or 4/4s or just something that survives a bolt is, like, more relevant than this. On the other hand, that it costs 2. Like, yeah. This, it's so different.
I mean, Pack Rat, a bunch of these.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe a few of the, like, autonomous or whatever lords, the robot lords that could be any creature type. Could just be, like, and, like, Thoughtseize and stuff.
Yeah.
Might just be fine. I think this is a budget deck.
Right.
This also, have you seen the lists where people are playing Relentless Rats or the demonic version of this effect? The basic demonic, like it's a 1-drop that you can sack, and then you can, if you can get into your graveyard, you can exile it, and then you get rid of everything in your deck.
Oh, no, yeah. I talked all about that. Yeah. That's so sweet.
Explain what the deck does, because I'm a little bit loose on it.
Yeah. I was obsessed with this. I like posted that last week on 10 Minutes of Modern about it. So
I know, that's why I'm
bringing it up. Yeah,
you talked about it last week, right?
Yeah. He talked to, the guy that posted it called it Ratatouille, and his like whole, I think he played like 38 of these rats.
Uh-huh.
Or it might have been Relentless Rats, but I think you could do it either way. Played like 5 lands, 1 Lab Maniac. 4 of the lands, by the way, were Sheldock Isle. And like 3 Emrakul, and then I think Serum Powder.
Yeah, the thing that lets you mulligan for free.
So you basically are trying to mull a hand where you're going to have, and 4 Surgical Extraction. So you're trying to mull a hand that has basically no land, 1 rat at least, a Surgical Extraction, and you're then going to discard the rat, and end of turn, you're going to, for free, exile your entire deck. And then your draws will be
Sheldock Isles and Emrakuls.
Hopefully. You will Sheldock Isle, it will reveal an Emrakul, and by the time that you then can activate it and cast Emrakul for free and win. Or you have 1 Lab Maniac, so if you get totally boned and you can't get there, you just cast Lab Maniac and draw into the win.
Right.
So I mean...
So at a bare minimum, this is a better card than necessarily even Relentless Rats was for this deck's purpose, because you have a better game plan B of just casting this card.
I think because they're
2 lands.
Yeah, they're cheaper. I mean, that's the thing. It's like casting
a 3-drop when you have 5 lands is much harder than casting a 2-drop.
Yeah, exactly. And also the fact that, like, you know, I mean, yeah, there's a bunch of cool and fun ideas for how I think you could make this work. But
next is Broken Bond, green and a colorless, destroy target artifact or enchantment, and you may put a land from your hand onto the battlefield. I think it's just a good sideboard card for stuff like
Scapeshift.
What previously was Summer Bloom decks.
Oh, sure. I think it's probably good in both. I mean, I know Scapeshift wants to ramp. It doesn't want to just
So the thing is, Scapeshift's playing red green, and just if I want a way to kill artifacts in red green, there's just better choices than this. Being Destructive Revelry or Ancient Grudge. Like Ancient Grudge is just better.
I mean, it is and it isn't. Like,
what deck dies to 1 artifact destruction spell? Destroy 1 artifact.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, I guess, like,
the fact that in Summer Bloom decks, you play this instead of Summer Bloom, but you play this, you kill an artifact to put affinity off of 1 turn, and that 1 turn buys you, and you ramp a turn, and that deck
means everything.
One
in
turn
that
is
deck.
Everything.
Yeah.
Versus Scapeshift, where it's like, I put a land in the play for my hand when.
That's fair.
Yeah. Anything else on that card?
No, I think that's pretty much.
Sparring Construct. 1 mana, 1/1. When it dies, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. It's an artifact creature.
Yeah.
It's only relevant because it's a one drop artifact creature, and there aren't that actually many of them.
No, there really aren't.
When
actually,
when we did our like iconic things of every CMC episode,
yeah,
like I like didn't include artifacts in the long run in all of those categories because one like Signal Pest is the best one drop artifact creature.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. They just don't have like
Chronomaton.
There's a few of them and they're all important to look like at Affinity because just is this a Affinity card possibly?
Hex Parasite.
Yeah.
I think Hex Parasite's the best one.
Probably.
I love that card. That card's sweet. And that's actually, that card's with actually, sagas, yeah, really cool. Card's good with sagas, exactly.
All right, next is Skirt Prospector. We did an entire episode on how great this card is.
We talked a
two,
lot about
two it. 2 weeks ago. It was our preview card. He's great. Art's great.
Yeah.
Sacking goblins is great.
There's like a, yeah, there's a cool like tribal,
there's
not
like
tribal,
two different, there's yeah, like four different directions. It goes infinite with.
Yeah, with.
Good cards, so.
What's it called? With Metallic Mimic
and
Murderous Redcap.
Yep.
Yeah, so there you go.
Infinite damage, infinite mana.
Love that.
Next, I have Opt. They reprinted it.
Yeah, I guess they just wanted around in Standard.
This card has been relatively unimpressive to me, actually.
Yeah,
in Modern. It, like, it's fine, and like, but just in general, I almost always want to Serum Visions over it.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Like, I think in decks that are control-y, it's better than as your fifth Serum Visions than
right.
some other
than
cards
sleight
are.
Of hand.
Or like, I've even done some Thoughtseize Inquisition 5/2 or 3/2 splits with it, where it's like sometimes one is better than the other enough that
right.
you want a little bit of both.
Sure,
but yeah, it's been. I mean, I'm glad it's around.
It's just better with Snapcaster is the only difference. It's like that's the only real.
Yeah, but it's not.
No,
yeah.
And it's only if you want to be playing a
Drago
strictly flash deck.
Yeah,
yeah. And even then, those flash decks sometimes don't care as you get to the middle of the game anymore about casting Opt. You're okay to just like tap one of your lands on your turn if it's more value. So
right.
like even then, it's not that relevant.
Lenor Elves is back. It's great.
Yeah, the OG. The OG Elf.
Gitu Lava Runner. This is red for a 1/2. As long as you have two or more instant or sorcery cards in your graveyard, it gets +1 in haste. So if you theoretically on turn one bolt an opponent and then on turn two bolt them again and cast this, you have a Goblin Guide that does not give them a land.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you can...
It's very hard for this to be good on turn zero.
Right.
Or turn one, but I think this is better than Goblin Guide on turn two beyond.
I mean, but that just defeats the purpose of Goblin Guide.
Right.
But I looked at this card and did think about that. Like, you know, there's probably something to be done. If we had Gitaxian Probe in the format, this would be a little more significant.
Yes, yes.
But the fact that we don't means this card has a much harder time actually being good.
Agreed. Artificer's Assistant. 1 blue. Creature bird flying. Whenever you cast a historic spell, scry one, and it's a 1/1.
Yeah, I mean, look, this card, I want this card to be good. It seems like it has so much potential to be good. I cut it in game two every single game this last weekend.
I don't think it's good in limited. I think it's bad in limited. I think in modern is the place where it might find a home, because playing this in affinity isn't bad. It's like, it's a creature that can be equipped with sword, or with clamp, or not clamp,
plating.
Plating, that doesn't get affected by all of the artifact hate in the format, so
yeah.
like you don't get wrecked by, you know, different versions of that. That also, every time you cast one, it draws you to more cards. So I would play this instead of something like the draw to affinity card.
Yes, and instead of Thoughtcast.
Instead of Thoughtcast, I would maybe play this because it does something similar, but it's more aggressive and it's on the game plan.
I wonder if this fits into those Grand Architect decks, those Blue Steel decks.
Oh, I think it. Definitely does. How are you not more hyped on this card for that reason?
Well, because those decks, what's sweet about those decks is that they get the one drop is disruptive. That's why those decks are good.
Sure.
You have like a curse catcher effectively in those decks, and this is good, but like
in Architect decks though, not necessarily maybe that one, in a different version of them.
Yeah.
I feel like this card's great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, certain Architect decks, definitely.
Like,
Architect is
always looking for one drops that do well with what its game plan is.
One and two blue creatures that are like solid, always. And
yeah.
I think maybe this
Weren't
is...
Weren't you making that one drop that enters play and like looks at the top four cards of your library unless you reorganize it?
Sage of Epitear?
Yeah, weren't
yes.
you like making that? This is just better than that in
not
this
even,
deck?
Not even close. Not even close.
That can't be true.
It looks at the top four. Alex.
It flies.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a real argument to be made for this card in the combo version in the architect with Pilipala. I go infinite version because mm-hmm. you're digging, and that's the point. And I think that you probably, because Pilipala is a 1/1 flyer, and this guy's a 1/1 flyer, you could kind of build that deck to be a little bit more of like an early aggressive Flyers deck that also has the backup game plan of going infinite off like a Walking Ballista or something. Maybe, but...
Sure. Next, Adventurer's Impulse. Green, look at the top three cards of your library. You may reveal a creature or land card and put them in your hand. Why does green get all the good one mana cantrips?
Yeah, I know. Seriously. It's like now with like Ancient Stirrings and this and what's the other one? The Plains legendary one?
The legendary
one. Oh, the Nissa. They keep printing sweet green cantrips.
Yep.
Which is bizarre. It's not really what I thought.
Traverse the Ovenwald.
Yeah, right? Yep. I didn't think that green was supposed to be that, but it is apparently.
I think it's just because it dictates what you can get versus blue can get anything. And so blue is better because of that. So it's more dangerous to print good ones. Well, green, you can print it because there's more of an ability to whiff off of this.
Yes.
Because you could, I guess, reveal the other three Adventurous Impulses in your deck. But into it.
Yeah.
Tatyova, Benthic Druid. 3 blue, blue green. Legendary creature, Merfolk Druid. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 1 life and draw a card.
Oh, sure. Right.
I think this is the least expensive landfall draw card ever printed, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So that's just a thing that we should be relevant and paid attention to.
Yeah, I mean, this is... There's...
You can ramp this out on turn 3 pretty easily, and then any land you play from that...
Put this in a Lotus Cobra deck. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I love the idea of playing this on turn 3 off... You can get 5 mana on turn 3 off Cobra, right? That's the best you can do with it.
I don't know if it's the best you can do with it, but it's the most naturally likely.
That's the traditional. You play it on turn 2 and you play a fetch on turn 3.
Best involves playing Summerbloom-like effects and stuff like that. That goes like a little crazier, but you just fetch and you have 5 mana.
Unfortunately, then they just kill this thing. They probably either kill your Lotus Cobra or they kill this thing.
Sure.
So then you're kind of like, oh, sweet.
Once in a play, you have priority too. So.
Yeah, but if you're playing a 5, it costs 5, right?
Yeah.
If you're playing a 5 drop on turn 3, then what are you going to do?
It's Fatal Push proof.
Yeah, that's true.
And if they path you, you get a free man out of it because it enters play with your Lotus Cobra in play.
Oh,
or they path your Lotus Cobra and you get this a turn earlier.
Dope.
Garna the Bloodflame, black red 3, legendary creature, human warrior, flash. When Garna the Bloodflame enters the battlefield, return to your hand all creature cards in your graveyard that were put there from anywhere this turn. Other creatures you control have haste. Interesting. I had this card in 2 of my pools, never got to the part where I read that it gives other creatures haste.
Yeah.
So that's actually better than I thought it was, and I put it on this list just because the fact that like it can draw you a bunch of cards if you somehow get creatures into your graveyard from your library.
Yeah, it feels like one of those things that's where it's like they stapled that last part on at the bottom. Almost like didn't need it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Seems fine.
It's fine. She's very fast.
Cost 5.
It's cost 5. And it's a 3-3. If it was a 3-4, we'd talk about it. Yeah. Arvad the Cursed. 3 black, white, death touch, lifelink, other legendary creatures you control get +2/+2.
Yeah, I had this card in one of my limited pools. Interesting card. Uncommon, right? It's it's
blast a 5. I've been only talking about uncommon so far.
It's We're a 5 mana. It's a 5 mana 3-3.
True.
I mean,
but it's a 5 mana 3-3 that overruns.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is powerful, and it's legendary, so like... Legendary and it's multicolor, and if you build like a heavy legendary deck, I mean, it's a big effect, but it still seems like it's a little bit clunky.
Next card is Whisper Blood Lithurgist.
Oh, this card's sweet. I had this card in that same pool, and so I'm just going to tell a quick story because this is something awesome I got to do at the pre-release. I had Lich's Mastery, the 3 black 3 and like legendary enchantment that maybe we'll talk about. I don't know.
I don't think we are.
Yeah, it's a bad card.
This is
but
the moment.
I played it with Slimefoot, the black-green 1 uncommon 2/3 legend that you can make saplings.
We will be talking about
it. So I had that and Lich's Mastery together, and... in the same deck as the card you just mentioned. What was the card you just mentioned? You said Arvax.
How to pronounce his name? Whisper Blood Lithurgist.
And I had Whisper in the deck as well. So like, I was just pretty much staring down my opponents being like, okay, so do your worst, because what's going to happen is I'm going to make a token in response when you try to kill my Slimefoot, and then I'll tap this Whisper to sack the token plus some other creature to get back the Slimefoot end of turn. But because I have Lich's Mastery in play, through this process, I'm going to draw like 3 cards and you're going to lose like 3 life. And I just like sat there staring my opponents down, and it was just like disgusting engine. And it was awesome. So
yeah. So for those who don't know, it's legendary creature, human cleric, sacrifice 2 creatures, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. It's a 2/2. This effect is just something that doesn't exist. It may exist as kind of, there are better ones out there that you can sacrifice 1 creature to do this in Magic history, but I think this is the first one in Modern, and anytime you have a different way to reanimate things that also has a different kind of engine attached to it is something I think to pay attention to.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, the ability to, you know, in our Aristocrats deck to sack two of these guys, there's this beefier dude that we'll get to once we get to rares that also kind of goes in a deck similar to that where, you know, you're trying to just get big things into play by sacrificing things. And I definitely think this is a card that has potential and yeah, I mean, to be a combo card.
It does cost four and it does require a tap. So you need haste or an untap with it. Sure. Which is a little problematic, but yeah, I mean, there's cool potential here for sure.
It's like engine-y, yeah. And that's something they'll always pay attention to.
Definitely.
Warcry Phoenix, 3 red, Phoenix, 2-2, Flying Haste. Whenever you attack with 3 or more creatures, you may pay 2 red. If you do, return Warcry Phoenix from your graveyard to the battlefield, tapped and attacking.
Always looking for sweet new Phoenixes.
Well, yeah, I mean, now with Hollow One decks being the second most played deck in the format, I think anything that you can reanimate in that deck...
Yeah,
for some amount of mana is something to look into. I think this is just worse than what they're already playing. They have the Ferocious one.
Right.
So I don't know if it's really going to be relevant, but...
Yeah.
It can see play in that if they are looking for more effects.
I think it's a little less good than other Phoenixes, mm-hmm. but, you know.
Settle the score. 2 black-black. Exile target creature. Put 2 loyalty counters on a planeswalker you control. You know how easy it is to ultimate with Liliana with this card?
Yeah, probably pretty easy, right?
I think you ultimate on turn 3 or turn 4, like you like turn 1 plus I'm confirming her loyalty,
confirming
they like updated the decked app, which is making my life harder. Oh, not on Dominaria, just ever. But yeah, so I mean there's a few different planeswalkers I think out there that this like allows to ultimate the turn after you untap with them. So yeah, you plus with Liliana, putting her at 4. The next turn you cast a spell, putting her at 6 loyalty, and then you ultimate her.
Yeah, really, that's really, like, really powerful.
That's like pretty gross.
Yeah.
I mean, it exiles the creature you're killing, so it's like just a decent effect anyways. And then if you do it with Liliana, the Last Hope, does it do it as well? So you go to 4. No, put it at 6, but then you can plus one more time. So you plus twice, exile a thing, and then the following turn you get to ultimate, bring her down the 7, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's epically powerful.
Yep. I think this card is like... possible to be looked at these mid-range decks as like another option. It's just a good removal spell that gets rid of a lot of things permanently and then also can do annoyingly broken things if you have a good planeswalker in play.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's you're not talking about that card as a I'll play this in a deck because it's an okay card and it'll interact with my deck. You're playing this in a this is one of the unfair things that I'm able to do, and I'm playing this because I'm playing a powerful planeswalker deck.
Correct.
And I want it. That's like
playing an Esper Walker deck that lets you just ultimate 2 turns earlier. That's yeah, very powerful.
For sure. What's the name of the card?
Let me find it.
The name of the card
is Settle the Score.
Settle the Score. All right, keep going. I'm just going to stare at this sucker.
Baird, Steward of Argive. 2 white-white, Vigilance, Legendary Creature, Human Soldier. Creatures can't attack you or planeswalkers you control unless they pay 1 for each of those creatures.
Yeah, I had this in that same deck. I had this in actually both days.
I mean, him being a 2/4/4 drop is... interesting. Like, it doesn't die to Lightning Bolt.
No.
Hard to kill it with push, and yep, it makes it so creatures are really difficult to get to you with.
Yeah, right.
It's like
I mean,
pretty defensive spell. You know, Legendary as a card type is also something just to pay attention more to. There's more, you know, with the mocks that got printed that we'll talk about. Literally, I think it's the last card because we're going in descending order. I think there's definitely a conversation to have here.
Yeah, I mean, I also, you know, again, you're mentioning sort of the Legendary deck, but like, imagine playing this card in a deck that has Hero's Blade, and you lay this card down, and even if you are an aggressive deck, all of a sudden Hero's Blade gets automatically attached to this thing. Now you have a 5/6 Vigilance. So now you're talking about a 5/6 with Vigilance that makes it impossibly hard for your opponents to attack you profitably if you have a Hero's Blade in play.
Oh, sure.
So like, I mean, I think if you're playing that... if you're playing that deck, you have Hero's Blade.
Yeah, Hero's Blade is... I have a like zoo list built that's kind of taking advantage of the mocks, and we'll talk about that later. But Hero's Blade is like the most powerful thing it's doing.
Well, also like... so, okay, those zoo decks that would play like 2 Elspeths in the 4-drop slot.
Yeah.
I think you could play this guy in the 4-drop slot possibly, sure, because he's like really good, and he immediately comes down and becomes huge.
Except the one difference between this and Elspeth is that this guy... isn't very aggressive in the deck we're currently describing as aggressive.
Yes.
This is a little bit better in like Thalia-based prison decks.
Right.
Which I still think is a good thing to talk towards. You know, I don't think that's not necessarily powerful.
Yep.
Next, I'm going to do these together because they're very similar and I will repeat ourselves a lot. The Wizard's Lightning and Retort combo.
Yeah.
So Counterspell and Lightning Bolt.
Basically, my feeling on these two cards is this. I don't actually think that Wizard's Retort is going to make an impact, because I think that even if, and this is, and maybe I'm wrong here, but even if regular Counterspell was legal in Modern, I think it would see some play, but I don't think it would like break the format. I think, honestly, the decks that want to be playing Counterspells want efficient Counterspells that create tempo or card advantage. Like, just hard counters are fine, but they're not like what the format's about.
I can't see a single Delver player not deck not playing four of these.
Maybe. I mean,
you play Delver on turn one, you have Counterspell. You play Snapcaster Mage at any other point, you have Counterspell. You play Vendilion Click at any other point.
I know, but if you don't have a creature, then you have three mana Counterspell, whereas like Logic Knot is just Counterspell, and people play Logic Knot, and you don't need to be playing a Wizard deck to play Logic Knot.
I don't, maybe they play a split, but like, I think that the thing that that deck was missing was good, consistent, always Counterspell.
Maybe. I mean, I could be totally wrong about this, and maybe I'm misunderstanding quite the power, but when I started to really think about like, also, the decks that counter profitably,
right,
they often want to pay one mana to do it. Like, they want to be doing Spell Snare, they want to be playing Spell Pierce, and sometimes they play Logic Knot, but also they want to be playing Cryptic Command, or they want to draw a card off Remand. Like, nobody plays Mana Leak anymore, because, like...
Well, the problem with Mana Leak is that the decks that want to play Mana Leak want you to go to the late game, and Mana Leak is bad in the late game. Well, this is good in the late game.
I know, but you're talking about a Wizard's Delver deck.
Well, but Snapcaster Mage is just a Wizard.
Yeah, I mean, true. So you can flash this thing back off a Snapcaster and just flash back Counterspell.
And you know, we've talked a ton about how there's these other cards that are like half cancels, that like cancel is bad if it's just cancel. But worst case scenario, it's cancel is not that bad.
Right.
Like, there are many a cards out there that if sometimes it happens to just be a cancel, but it can be better than that most of the time or half the other times, you would look at that card.
I have more faith in the Wizard's Lightning, because I think that just decks in Modern being able to play eight copies of Lightning Bolt
with Snapcaster Mage is just going to be good.
Is insane.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think like the whole idea that you have Bolt Snap Bolt, like I also could see so easily playing a Snapcaster deck with like lots of burn and then Familiar's Ruses in the deck, and you just like just get so much value out of Snapcaster Mage and Lightning Bolts. You just like the whole entire deck.
This is also really good.
Yeah.
I guess my issue between these two, and the reason I like Counterspell almost more than this one, is that this effect exists as a better card in Lightning Bolt. The Counterspell does not exist
right
in Modern as a better card. There are variants of it that are kind of better, but I played with Deprive.
I know. People like Deprive. Deprive is good.
I think this is better than Deprive 7 out of 10 times.
Sure. It'll be interesting. I mean, I think that there's definitely a Blue-Red Wizards deck, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think that both of these cards, I think both of them will see play. To be totally honest, I don't think either, like... The conversation is which one's more likely. I picked the blue one, but if one is playable, probably the other one is playable in the same deck.
Like, I also think
Delver,
that, like,
Snapcaster Mage, Vendilion Click, 8 Lightning Bolts, 4 Counterspells, and 4 Remands seems like a deck that is going to be really hard to beat.
I also think you could play 2 copies of Naban, Dean of Iteration, which we'll get to in a little bit. And like, can you imagine like later in the game when you played a couple Lightning Bolts and you just like flash down Snapcaster and just like get double flashback on Bolts in your graveyard?
I didn't like her that much, but okay, we'll talk about her too.
That's like, oh.
Slimefoot the Stowaway.
I talked about this card, yeah.
We talked about it a little bit. I think there's a Fungus deck. I don't think it's very good, but yeah. I think we've gone from it being a tier doesn't exist to a tier 3 or a tier 4 deck.
Sure. Sure.
And I think this set has Slimefoot. It has that other 2-drop. There are enough old Fungus cards. Like, there's one that you can sacrifice Sapperlings to do -1/-1. There's one that you can sacrifice Sapperlings to make mana. This guy does really well with that sacrifice plan. Like, he wants. Yeah. And then there's just enough token producers out there to make something go. I don't know if the deck is any good, but between him and the 2-mana Lord, I think you now have a reason to be in this deck.
Yeah, that's fair.
And we've talked about 100 times, and we'll get to the 2-mana Lord there, but a 2-mana Lord makes tribal decks more interesting.
Always pushes it, yeah.
Goblin War Chief. We also talked about this a lot when we talked about Skirt Prospector in 4 episodes ago, so make sure to check that out.
It's totally good enough, but it's a 3-drop, unfortunately, and these decks, like, unless the 3-drop you're playing has, like, just insanity built into it, like, Rejuri interacts so favorably with so many things you're doing in the Merfolk deck, like... It's hard to justify 3-drop Lords otherwise.
This plays like Rejuri. In fact, I would say this is most comparable to Rejuri. Where Rejuri untaps a land, this just makes everything one cheaper.
So it taps or untaps a permanent.
Sure, I'm not saying Rejuri isn't necessarily better, but Rejuri also just gives +1/+1. This gives haste, which goblins need more. So you not only get things for cheaper, you then attack that turn with them.
Yeah, goblins aren't expensive. Yeah, I get you.
Some of them. I mean, the Siege Gang's expensive. Siege Gang, yeah. Red Cap.
Yeah.
I mean, playing War Marshal for one is like really good.
Yes, yeah, so, it's so good. And like being able to attack with both of the
tokens that turn, and then you, the one dies and you get another. Yeah, I think Warchief is better than that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's Goblins is good yet. I don't know if we have all the pieces needed, but I think we're getting close.
Not like it's good yet. just my opinion.
This is your boy.
Yeah.
Or girl. It's a lady. Oh. Adelez the Cinderwind.
I love that.
Blue-red, colorless, legendary creature, human wizard, flying haste. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, wizards you control get +1/+1 until end of turn.
Yeah, this card's super sweet. This is, I mean, this it's weird because it plays into that same blue-red wizards deck we're talking about, but it is a 3-drop, so it's a little slow.
I'm a little soft on it because it's a 3-drop.
Yeah, but I do think that, like, this combined with all of the other wizard stuff you can be doing and all of these, like, wizard spells, like, this might just be the kind of thing where, actually, you could play like lots and lots of one drops. Like this, maybe this is the deck that wants you to play Sage of Epitir, and you're just gonna sequence your draws and stack it. And then all of a sudden, this guy comes down. You play a couple spells, and your Sage is a 4/4. And sure. Like, I mean, maybe that's, I don't know. That could be wrong. Not entertained.
This is a quick one. This is the Flame of Keld. One red. It is a saga. One, discard your hand. Two, draw two cards. Three, if a red source you control deal damage to a permanent or player this turn, it deals that damage +2 more. Instead. There is always a reason to look at discard your hand. There's also always a reason to look at red draw two. I don't think this card is necessary. I think it needs to do them both at the same time.
You would have to be playing like a super duper duper aggressive, like do something with tons of stuff in your graveyard deck. That
like, or madness is a thing you're trying to play off with this, because this is like madness, a bunch of spells. And if you have reasons to go off with madness, I think maybe it's worth it. But I agree that I think this is a little bit wonky.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you'd have to be doing something pretty weird, so.
But, I mean, you know, there's now two cards, one black mana and one red in this, that discard your whole hand.
True.
So.
Yeah, redundancy is always a thing to pay attention to.
Tetsuko Umezawa Fugitive, blue, colorless, legendary creature, human rogue, creatures you control with power or toughness, one or less, can't be blocked, 1/3.
This card's really sweet and limited.
If you have this in Infect, do you never block again?
It's called Tetsuko.
Tetsuko Umezawa Fugitive.
Right. I saw this card played in Limited a bunch.
Yeah. It was in you were playing Limited this weekend.
Yeah.
It makes every 1/1 unblockable. And then you pump it. And then you kill them because it's Infect.
Yeah, it does seem good, doesn't it? It does seem good in that deck.
Like, or other decks that want to get in with 1/1s, but that deck specifically in Modern. I think maybe as a sideboard card.
Yeah.
But even as a sideboard card, I think this, like, the scariest card in Infect to me has always been the unblockable one and the land for different reasons.
Yeah, it doesn't play particularly well with Hierarch, though, because the attack triggers pump. What?
Oh, you can't be blocked.
Right? So after the triggers happen, they can still block.
Sure.
So that's kind of a pain. And Hierarch's the best card in that deck, so it's...
Yeah, I don't think you cut it. Just because there's a little bit of a nombo, I don't think it means... Because you also can just attack with him and the other one.
Yeah,
and
true.
And you just don't get the +1/+1 trigger, but it's unblockable.
True, 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 true.
So, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily the most important.
Yeah, something to pay attention to, though. I think the card's sweet. I think that's a good one to have on our radar, because definitely that's a real deck.
Spore Crown Thalid.
This is the one you were talking about.
Two-man Lord. One green, one colorless fungus. Each other creature you control that's a fungus or sapling gets +1/+1.
Just straight up simple. No other abilities. Just simple.
It's a 2/2.
It's a 2/2 for two.
Yeah. Here's the deal. The other ability is that it gives it to both funguses and saplings.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways to make a lot of saplings real quick.
Yeah, there really are. And there's also like... There's like a lot of fun. There's like Utopia Mycon and like other stuff that's been printed over the years where you're like, they could do all kinds of weird stuff with this.
Well, just Thalid, which is it gets +1/+1 on the front end, and when it dies, it gets +1/+1 on the back end.
Yeah, is there like some sort of like Sapperling ramp deck that's gonna get like Doubling Season into play and just win?
I don't know why you get. I mean, there's just isn't there 4-drop versions of Doubling Season for only tokens?
Yeah, but so many of the funguses and Thalids they make
the
funguses off
on
of counters.
Yeah.
So like, is there some way where like you play all of these together and you just like lay a Doubling Season and the next turn you just like completely go insane?
Maybe. I mean, the thing I was really looking at this is like playing it mostly as an aristocrat deck, and like if you happen to get enough spore counters on a fungus to make a thing, great.
Yeah, right.
But like that's never really going to happen. And
right.
It's more like I'm playing a bunch of sac outlets like Skirt Prospector that like literally there's a Skirt Prospector for saplings.
Saplings, right?
It just also can make one eventually. So there's just stuff to play here. I think there's an interesting, like, there's now enough pieces. There's a Lord and then the 3-mana guy.
Yep.
Your boy Slimefoot. Like,
Slimefoot.
Which also takes advantage of having a lot of mana, which we just talked about might be possible. Like, I think there's a lot to do here.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's now a deck. I don't think it's a tier one deck. I don't think it's a tier two deck, but I think it went from not being a deck to being a deck.
Yeah, and I mean, stuff. It's not like stuff goes from being tier five to tier one. I mean, sometimes slowly but surely. Yeah, but usually it slowly but surely gets, like, you know, injected a little bit more. New cards get printed. People try it out, and then
I think the only deck I can think of that really did tier not existent to tier one, tier two is Lantern Control.
Yeah, right. That, like, actually came out of total obscurity. Like,
wasn't a deck. Was a deck.
And I would say the other one, Summer Bloom, when it came out.
No, because people would play that deck. Like,
oh, really?
That was a tier three deck. That was a deck that existed, and then someone just got good enough with it, or a good enough player played it
to win
with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Next, this is really good with a bunch of Zapperlings. Song of Freylaes.
Yeah.
Until end of your turn, creatures you control gain Birds of Paradise ability, and then at the end you can pump all your creatures, and they gain Vigilance, Trample, and Indestructible until end of turn. It's a beating.
Yeah.
And it, like, gets you the mana to get a bunch of stuff into play, and then takes advantage of it pretty well.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. I mean, it's a little bit of a, it's like a little bit win more, because if you don't have anything going on, it does nothing.
Yeah.
But something to pay attention to.
For sure.
Definitely as a combo piece, because, you know, eventually if you give enough creatures reasons to tap for mana, you can do crazy things.
Yep.
Your boy, but he needs two mana on tap, right?
Which one?
Pili Pala.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Love that card.
Two mana on tap, though.
Yeah, yeah, he does cost two.
Almost there.
Yeah.
Sage of Latinam and Orcish Vandal. These are the human Artificer and Orc Warrior. One red and one blue. Oh, sorry, blue colorless, red colorless. One sacrifices an artifact to do two damage. The other one sacrifices an artifact to draw a card.
Are they both reprints or just the Sage?
I think just the Sage.
Yeah, because Sage definitely is.
Orcish Vandal might be a reprint as well.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, anytime you have an effect like this, it's interesting. Being able to sacrifice an artifact to do damage is something that is possible to take advantage of. And it's to any target.
Yeah, and you do have to tap it, though.
The, like, decks that want to be able to sacrifice artifacts to draw cards, to, like, put eggs into the graveyard to draw more cards, to then untap this guy in some way. You know, there's right. different ways to kind of, like, this guy with Paradox Engine is, like,
Nuts.
I mean, yeah, there's definitely things to talk about doing there.
In my Joyra deck in Brawl, that's what I was doing. Was all of these things.
With these two guys, right? Yeah. Nature's Spiral, nothing to talk. This is a reprint. What's cool about it that I didn't know about it until recently, that art is a top-down view of Strip Mine.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
So that's cool. That's the kind of stuff in the set that I love a lot, is that you randomly will see just in art, just like random stuff that you're like, oh.
Cool, yeah.
Merfolk Trickster, blue 2/2 Merfolk Wizard, flash. When this enters the battlefield, target creature and opponent controls loses all abilities until end of turn.
This is a real card. This is a totally real card. This is a 4-of. There was a 5-0 deck on a daily from, like, a couple days ago that played this, and, like, I think this is going to probably replace Harbinger of the Tides for the most part.
Okay.
I think
I can see that.
I think you could play a split, and you could certainly have 2/2 if you wanted
What cards are you really trying to lose the abilities on, though?
I mean, there's only a couple you can think of. It actually has less to do with that. It has more to do with the fact that Harbinger only interacts with tapped creatures, and this doesn't. So the end of turn, if you need to, like, push through your last couple points, you have the ability to just throw this guy down and tap their blocker. I mean, that's where it's the most important. Mm-hmm. It has way more to do with that than it has to do with the ability thing. I mean, I think the ability thing matters some. Like, you can probably, like, stifle a combo for a turn or...
So you think just flash 2/2 for 2 is that important versus, like, I think bouncing a tap thing is going to be more relevant more often. I can see doing a 2/3 split or a 2/2 split or a 2/1 split, because, like, I do think this is relevant sometimes, but, like...
Well, remember also, though, that Harbinger without Aether Vial costs 4. To flash in.
Oh, to flash in, it costs 4. You're
right.
Yeah,
you can play it as an instant for 4. Or
I can see that. Okay.
So this card is just consistent. You know, I mean, they're both good with Vial, obviously, but I think this card is real. I think this is going to be a thing that people actually do. And also, like, I mean, there's other stuff, like, you know, tapping down an infect creature.
This is a question I have for Twitter. If our followers can tweet at us different relevant things in Modern that you want to turn their abilities off for a turn, I would love to see kind of what people think are relevant here, because I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, shutting off lifelink here and there is probably important. Shutting off, like, but I mean, again, if you can tap it, it's like the abilities almost don't matter for the most part.
Sure.
But anyway, yeah, I think it's real. I think this is going to be a real thing.
Okay. Like, because I don't think this makes Tarmogoyf into a 0/1.
No.
No.
Doesn't.
Yeah. Okay. Gaia's Blessing. Green and a colorless. Was this in Modern?
Yeah, it's a reprint. It was time shifted.
Oh, it was time shifted. Okay, moving on. This is a big one. This is probably the biggest one in the set. Dampening Sphere.
Damping Sphere, yeah. This is
Damping Sphere. I'm going to say that wrong so many times over the next 6 years of this card being legal.
It's already been played as a sideboard staple in a ton of big decks. Yeah. It's a totally
it
real card.
It shuts down Storm and it shuts down Tron.
Yep.
Great.
Yeah.
It's easy. And it's colorless.
So and it's colorless. Yeah, yeah. This fits straight into people's sideboards right next to Stony Silence, right next to Rest in Peace. It's a 2-drop. It gets played everywhere.
Right.
This is going to be one of the staple modern cards.
Sideboard cards forever.
Yeah.
It's... A lot of decks have problems with both of those two decks, and it makes it so you don't have to play two different sideboard options. You can play this one, even though you might be able to, for one against one of those decks, play a better one. Specifically Tron, I think there might be a little bit better options. This is still just as fine as anything else.
Totally.
Especially because Tron sideboard cards are always a little wonky. Board the Weatherlight, white, colorless. Look at the top five cards of your library. You may reveal a historic card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. The main thing that's interesting to me about this is it's a white cantrip.
Yep.
So for mono white decks that need to find pieces, this is something to look at.
Definitely.
It has to be historic, so that's a very specific need. Next card we have is, and this is the last common or uncommon, and then we get into rares and mythics, Dauntless Bodyguard. One white.
Oh, this card's sweet. This card's totally sweet.
Yeah. One white, 2/1. Dauntless Bodyguard enters the battlefield. You choose another creature you control. Sacrifice Dauntless Bodyguard. The chosen creature gains indestructible until end of turn.
Yeah.
The most skill testing part of this card is going to be how many people realize that they should be casting this on turn one, just attack for a 2/1 against in some matchups.
Yeah, I mean it's a Savannah Lions with upside. That's the point.
Right.
You know,
and this upside is pretty relevant. Like late game, you get this, and you can make any one of your threats just impossible to kill.
Yep.
Or excluding Path to Exile and. Early game, it's a 2/1/1.
We keep talking about this. I mean, and people have now asked about it, but the all 1-mana 2/1 deck, and like there's so many good ones now. Mm-hmm. It's outrageous the number of good 1-mana 2/1s there are. That like I swear to God, you can build you can build 40 of them. You could probably just play like 36 1-mana 2/1s, 4 Path to Exiles, and 20 lands, and just like do the thing.
I know I play 4 Aether Vials and 16 lands.
Okay.
Aether Vial just needs to get the one, and you need one planes.
Yeah, okay, fine. 4 Aether Vial, 16 lands, and then go even further and play
4
Immortal Servitudes and go down to 14 lands.
Well, you play also 4 of the land, the legendary land that gets you planes when it.
Yes.
Legendaries?
Yeah.
Just to like get there.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I don't know. You'd have to have some velocity to get through your deck faster. Like, you'd have to be able to draw more cards and get more of these guys into play.
Sure.
But that's where I think like Immortal Servitude maybe.
This is also just like anytime you have a 1-mana creature just that is relevant at protecting combo pieces or something else, you know, look at, I just had it. Oh, the 3/2 that finds 2/1/1s or 1-drops.
Yeah, Ranger.
Ranger of Egos. Yeah. So definitely super relevant there as well. All right. Last, I guess there's technically one uncommon. There's the Memorial of War, which is the red, enters the battlefield tapped, but you can destroy a land. It's just another wasteland variant. It's not good compared to the other ones. all right, on to rares. But before we do that, we have shout-outs.
A couple other quick shout-outs. We're going to be talking really quickly about the Facebook fan page, guys. The Facebook group. It's not a fan page. You guys created it. It's awesome.
Yeah, we created it.
Okay. That's I have one for Action Movie Anatomy page. That's called the Action Movie Anatomy fan page, so yeah. I get mixed up.
Yep.
We interact in that group a lot. There's
it's
like 4,000 people.
So there's a group and a page. The group is the more important thing to like. If you get to the page accidentally, there's a link to the group on the page. So
yes.
They're linked, so either way you'll find one or the other. It's a great place to have communications about Modern. Post cool brews there. Sometimes people are a little bit... critique your stuff, so you know, get ready to, if you're going to post something a little wacky, to get people to kind of be a little bit more, you know, why is this good? But you know, it's definitely a good place to get feedback and to talk to other Masters of Modern fans.
100%. And then the last thing I wanted to shout out, guys, is that Alex started a company called Kesco. I work for the company also, and we make games and we make toys, and we're in a bunch of cool stores right now. So check it out. We have Super Party Battle, our first game that's actually out there right now. You can buy it on ThinkGeek.com.
Yep.
It's a super great game. It's like King's Cup meets Magic.
Every person who's bought it and has played it who plays Magic has loved it.
Yeah.
So you should do that too. Also, if you want, there is a ice hoop contest. So we make a thing called the ice hoop, and it is a hula hoop that is out there in the world at Target and Kmart's. And if you post a video of you doing something really cool with the hoop, you could win a contest to get flown to Los Angeles, and then we'll go with you to Universal Studios Los Angeles, Hollywood, and we'll also draft a box of Unstable with you. That's only for Magic players that enter the hoop contest, and if they win. But yeah, to check that out. out. You just have to post Ice Hoop Challenge, hashtag it on either Facebook or Instagram.
Sick.
All right, so rares. And since this is in descending order, I got your boy, the red guy that you likes, best friend, Torgar Famine Incarnate. Black 6, legendary creature avatar. It's a 7/6. You can sacrifice a creature as you cast it to make it cost 2 less. So this could be a 2-mana 7/6. And when it enters the battlefield, target life total becomes half.
Yeah. I think this card's great.
I think on turn 3, you get a 7/6 for 2 and dome your opponent for 4 or 5. And
you should be playing this card as a 4 of in the Shadowborn Apostle deck with with some sweet demons. And you just go Shadowborn on turn 1, but 2 Shadowborn on turn
1. It's an avatar.
Yeah, I know. You don't have to search for this.
Sure.
2 Shadowborn on turn 2. Turn 3, attack with all of your Shadowborn Apostles, then sacrifice the 3 of them to play a 2-mana 7/6.
Mm-hmm. There's a few different ways to get 3 creatures into play by turn 3. Yep. And the other card I think this goes really well with, because once again we talked about redundancy, this adds redundancy to a deck, is decks that play the red guy that time spirals into play. As suspend, 1 red. You love him. He is your favorite. 1 red.
Greater Gargadon.
Yeah, Greater Gargadon in this.
He time spirals into play? What does that even mean? He's from the set time spiral?
He's from the set time spiral and uses the time mechanic of time countery things.
I love those things.
So both of these are like pretty good sack outlets that both get you in the long run a beefy guy into play. So it's definitely something to look into. Next we have Zahid, Djinn of the Lamp. 4 blue, legendary creature Djinn. It's a 5/6 with flying, but you may tap an artifact and pay blue 3 instead of the 6 mana to get into play. So it's a 5/6 flyer for 4 and tapping an artifact.
That's fine. I mean, in modern, if you could play a 5/6 flyer for 4 with no abilities and no flash, people would probably play it, but it wouldn't break the format.
Yeah,
it would just
I agree.
Be good. I mean, it would be overpowered.
It'd be fine. Yeah.
But it wouldn't like break the format.
I don't even know if it'd be overpowered. I think it would just be fine.
I think a 5/6 flyer for 4 is really good.
Yeah, I do. I agree.
I mean, that's, you know, but not insane.
Yep. Fall of the Thran. 5 white, destroy all lands. It's a saga, so that's the first thing. And then 2 and 3 are each player puts 2 lands from their graveyard onto the battlefield.
It's just kind of tangle wiry, right? That's what you told me when I was asking you if I should play it.
Yeah, it's tangle wiry. You have Rest in Peace in play, too. You can actually wreck a person.
Yes, that is.
Like, it has Armageddon attached to it, and I think anytime a card has Armageddon attached to
it. It costs 6, though, right?
Costs 6.
Yeah, I mean,
is there a 6-mana Armageddon, though, in Modern?
No, but there's, there's not, but there's really good things you can be doing at 6 that, that aren't Armageddon.
I don't know. If there's not Armageddon in Modern, that's a thing to talk about.
Yeah.
I'll as we go through this, you should on your phone look and see if there's an Armageddon in Modern.
Okay.
Next is Yawgmoth's Vile Offering. 4 and a black, legendary sorcery. You have to have a planeswalker or a legendary creature in play to cast it. Cough, Liliana of the Veil, cough. Put the top 1 target creature or planeswalker
card
from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. Destroy up to 1 target creature or planeswalker. Exile Yawgmoth's Vile Offering.
On the subject of what we were just talking about, it's called Boom Bust. You and I have played the card extensively. And, I mean, that's just obviously the best Armageddon, so I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, I guess in white, there's a different Armageddon plan, but you're fair. Now, back to Yawgmoth's Vile Offering. First off, this is my favorite card in the set from a storytelling perspective. Partly, this is the first time we've ever seen Yawgmoth, the main bad guy of Magic, for, 10 years.
Yeah.
Ever depicted on a card, actually.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen pieces of him, or, technically the cloud and Death Cloud is supposed to be his spirit or whatever.
But really?
This is actually him.
Huh.
He's a giant city wall arena thing with a face. And this is Gerard with the severed head of Urza offering it to Yawgmoth so he would bring Hana back to life.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah, I'm into it.
How many cards in the set feature Gerard?
A few. Not that many.
Because it's supposed to be story of how he got here.
We have his descendants.
Right.
We have descendants of his, and we have him here, and we have the tale of Gerard or the victory of Gerard, and I think one of the memorials has him in it.
Okay.
But this card itself is kind of just a better version, I think, than Cruel Ultimatum, and I know many people who like casting a Cruel Ultimatum in Modern for some reason. So
yeah. Seriously.
You have to have a Planeswalker in play. I wonder if there's a really powerful black Planeswalker that's good to put into play in Modern. I wonder.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's really good. Oath of Teferi, 3 blue-white, legendary enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you may flicker a thing. Exiles comes back at the end of the next end step, and then you may activate loyalty abilities on Planeswalkers twice a turn.
That's good.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So, you can play you just have any Jace or whatever you want in play. You get to use it three times in a turn. Is that correct, the turn you play this? Because you play a thing on turn four. You then on turn five activate it.
Yep.
Then you cast this, flickering it. Oh, it comes back at the next end step. No, you don't get to do it three times.
Yep.
Okay. But then you can flicker something else and or reset a planeswalker, and then you get to activate it twice. There's a bunch of planeswalkers I want to activate twice. We were just talking about how good just adding two counters to something is, and this is...
That's interesting, the way they're pushing that. You wonder if we're going to start to see some Turbo Walkers decks start to show up.
I think eventually something... And like, what's good about this is you want to play this later. Yes, it's a five drop,
yep,
but it happens towards the end of the game, and it has an ETB effect that if you can gain value off of is really good.
I'm also like the least bit surprised that card impressed you. That's like so your card.
It's a blue-white flicker effect with a planeswalker on it named Teferi.
I mean, you just like already are in love with Venser, so like this is just kind of like more Vensers.
It's almost better than Venser. Yeah. Traxos Scourge of the Krug. I don't. There's no the of Krug. Four, trample, enters the battlefield tapped and doesn't untap. Whenever you cast a Hyxora spell, untap. It's a 7/7 trample for four.
Yeah, it's good.
Actually, I've seen people talk about playing in different places. You hit someone with this once and you've done a lot of work.
I've seen people talk about playing this in Affinity. I mean, I don't think you'd play it in Affinity because it's a four drop, but I also could see it. I mean, you're going to untap it 100% of the time.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, there might be a more clever place to play.
Tethered decks that are just trying to get off and like, do some damage and need some win conditions. I think this works.
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, again, like, you know, that's looking for that sweet spot for the Architect decks. This is a four drop, not a five drop. You always want it to be a five drop you can cast for four with like the one of the accelerants on turn two.
Well, but I think this, because on turn two, the turn you play him, you can play this for four. You get this in the play.
Yeah, just like.
So like four drops that are powerful are something that Architect decks have always been hurting for.
Yeah.
Like, and five drops are always the problem. It's like, oh, it's either a six drop is really good and four drops really good. Five drops are a little wonky because you have like a floating mana.
Remember, you're trying to play Aetherium Sculptor as your two drop. So Sculptor on turn two and Architect on turn three, and you want to cast a five drop then on turn three.
Four.
I know that, but I'm saying
Aetherian Sculptor.
Yeah, that's sure. The most powerful thing that the curve does. So, but yeah,
four drops are good. But the problem is that five drops, then they're either bad always unless you have the combo off, or this is a playable, like tapping four mana to play this is fine.
Yeah, I agree.
Next, this is one a lot of people are talking about. Teshare's Ancestors of Possible. Three and a white legendary creature, Bird Cleric, flying. Whenever you cast a Sixoric spell, return target creature card with converted mana cost three or less from the graveyard to the battlefield.
Yeah, this card's
there
good.
There has to be a combo here in some way, right?
Has
like,
to be.
This and Eggs just goes a little bit off, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, this, like,
this could be the thing that makes Eggs come back.
Ugh, who wants that? Who no really one, wants
but that? The Historic is like built for that effect.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't want Eggs to come back.
Shalia, Voice of Plenty, white, three, flying, planeswalkers you control and other creatures you control have hexproof.
That card's super sweet.
So 3/4, flying, puts +1/+1 counters on each creature you control for six mana, four and green. This card is just, like, this is an effect decks are going to want at some point, and it's a 4-mana, 3/4 flyer, which is good enough. And then the fact that it can also late game pump your team is something that's super relevant.
Yeah. I'm looking at Tashar. I know there's a combo there. There has to be.
Yeah. I'm not the one to come up with it,
yeah,
but it exists. You're the one to come up with it.
Some sort of creature that when it enters the battlefield returns an artifact to your hand and you have a sack outlet. So then you sack the creature and get the artifact back to your hand.
Scrap Trawler in play.
And then you play the artifact again, getting the creature back into play, returning the artifact to your hand, you go infinite on some loop and you have some trigger. I don't know. That's maybe I'm being
I mean, this in a KCI deck is just...
Like, yeah,
works with what that deck is doing already.
Right.
Josu Vess, Lich Knight, 2BB, legendary creature, zombie knight. You can kicker it for six. It's a 4/5 for menace. If you kick it, you put in 8 2/2 black zombie knights.
This card's insane, especially it's in so limited. Dope. Is this card insane? Like, you get 20 power for 10 mana when you play this card. Mm-hmm. I had this in my limited deck. I never got to make 20 power.
But a 4/5. Like, the point is that a 4/5 menace for four is fine.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
Like, that's like Kalidus. It's better than Kalidus.
It's got it. Yeah, it's like completely. It's
very brawly. And then if you can get to the higher mana cost, which Jund decks can do, this is a card that does something. Is this better than Bloodbraid Elf? Probably not. But also the format's kind of gone to a point where Bloodbraid Elf isn't that great because that gets adjusted to it. So I think now is the time. If I was to enter a modern tournament with Jund, I would like vary my four drop spot. Because people are ready for Bloodbraid Elf, which means they're not ready for the Kalidus's of the world or the Pia and Kirin, or, you know, there's different things you can bring into play instead.
Right.
They're not prepared to handle because they're like, oh, I'm ready to get that Bloodbraid Elf player. And then you're like, Josu Veslishnite, can you handle a 4/5 that you can't block unless you have two creatures?
All right, so it's Glint Hawk is the creature. One
mana for a 2/2 that when enters the battlefield,
sacrifice a bunch of artifacts. The artifact that you cast to get this thing back from the graveyard is the one that goes back to your hand, and then it goes back to your hand, and you have to just have some way to sacrifice the Glint Hawk and replay it, and then you go infinite on a loop.
Well, you don't get Glint Hawk back. It's not an artifact creature.
Is Shalai only returns an artifact creature?
I think it's creature or card with convert. Oh no!
Yeah.
Oh.
So that's right. So you have some cheap artifact, and you just keep doing it. You have to
That's cool.
Zero man artifact. That's what it has.
Memnite. Just go off with Memnite.
Yeah, I mean this is probably kind of a dumb idea, but
all right, Jodah, Archmage Eternal, blue, white, red, colorless, legendary creature, human wizard, flying. You may pay all five colors to put any card from your hand into play. It's a 4/3. I mean, this just casts Emrakul for five.
if you want to see the most busted thing ever with this card, go watch the episode of Game Nights. Jimmy plays this. He plays this as his commander, and one of his early turns in the game is amazing. And it's, you should just need to watch it. It's crazy.
This guy, and a four three flying for four. It would be better if it was a 3/4 because Lightning Bolt kills this thing, but it's still something to talk towards. Also, it now means there's two copies of Fist of the Suns.
Totally.
So like, there's two different ways to play an Emrakul.
Yep.
It's an interesting card. I'd keep looking at it. Speaking of four drops to replace Bloodlaid Elf, Blood Braid Elf, that would be good with Josu, maybe. Grand Warlord of Rada, 2 red green, haste 3/4, which is pretty good on
solid.
Its own.
Yeah.
And then it makes a mana, a red or a green, for every creature that attacks that turn. So if you play this and then you attack with it, a Goyf and a Bob, you have 3 mana now on your next turn. You can play another effect. Like it is a very efficient mana producer. It kind of does what Bloodbraid Elf does a little bit. It creates advantage in a way. It's a hasty 3/4 versus a 3/2, which is a big deal. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, fair.
Tempest Djinn, 3/3. Or blue, flying, +1/+0 for each basic island you control, 0/4.
Yeah, I mean, so if you build your deck around it, this is a 3/4 flyer for 3. This is a little bit more than a 5/6 flyer for 4. A 3/4 flyer for 3 makes more sense, especially considering this could be as big as like a 5/4, right. Like a 6/4 for 3 pretty
every
quickly.
It gets bigger. The other thing for me that's interesting is like turn 1, blue 1 drop. Turn 2, blue 2 drop. Turn 3, this. Turn 4, Master of Waves. Sounds like... I think a mono-blue devotion deck that isn't Merfolk is totally a thing that could exist in Modern, and this is a pretty solid piece for that deck.
Yeah. I mean, just this being... Just this attacking on turn 4 as a 4/4...
Flyer for 3,
is really good.
Is really good.
Yeah. You can end again pretty fast if they can't answer that.
Sylvan Awakening. 2 green... Until your next turn, all lands you control are 2/2 elementals with indestructible and haste. They are still lands. This is 3 man. Well, first off, this goes infinite with a few cards. None that I don't know if they're in Modern. There's the you pay 5 mana and you get an extra attack step and untap all creatures you control.
Right.
So any of that kind of if you can find an effect like that in Modern, and there might be a dragon that does that you can get infinite attack steps with this. I think there is a dragon that does that. So that's a thing to be aware of. The other thing is just.
How can you get infinite attack steps? I don't get it.
Because it untaps all creatures. So if you have anything that you can pay mana in to gain a new attack step that untaps all creatures, which those cards exist.
Oh, like a repeat,
untaps
like
all
a,
these lands.
A repeatable effect.
A repeatable effect.
Got it.
Yeah. Not Mass Mutiny or whatever. That's not it. Yeah. So that this is a combo piece in some decks. Also, it's just like kind of a beating. If you like as an alternate win condition out of something like Scapeshift, like just having the ability to get them. Because you just pay this for 3 and then you attack for 10.
Yeah. I mean, these effects are always... I feel like these effects are always a trap. I always feel like there's like more there than...
One of the reasons I think this is less of a trap is the indestructible.
Yeah.
One of the reasons it's a trap is like you do it and they're like, I bolt your... Like, I now get wastelands out of my removal spells.
Yeah.
Which is bad. This helps against that.
Totally.
Steelleaf Champion, green, 5/4. Steelleaf Champion can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. This is going to go in every mono-green stompy deck.
This is just Leatherback Baloth, except better.
Better.
Yeah.
Just strictly better. I mean, it is strictly better.
They're both
Baloth is a 4/5.
Yeah.
So it's not strictly better because it doesn't...
Have the same stats?
Well, it does more damage, but it dies to more things.
The fact that you have 8 of these now is so sweet.
Yeah.
That mono green deck is getting nuts.
Yeah.
And talking about devotion, like...
The mono green's best devotion card is a pump spell, right?
Yeah. It's the Aspect of Hydra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still sweet. Into it. This will just see play.
Yeah,
that deck might not be any better than it is, but it'll see play.
I also think Galtra. I think Galtra starts to become a real card if you have these and Leatherback Bailoffs. You have this much power that you can be playing on for three. Like,
what's Galtra?
That's the 12/12 trample that gets cheaper for the power you control.
Oh yeah.
I just think like that deck is going to pretty consistently be able to play a Galtra 12/12 on turn four.
Sure.
Like, that seems pretty nuts.
Yeah, yeah. Squee the Immortal, red, colorless. You may cast Squee the Immortal from graveyard or exile. This is just a card that people should always look out for. Eventually, cards will be printed that break this card.
Yep.
Being able to cast a thing. Like, first off, Vengevine is great with this card.
Yeah, seriously.
And anytime there's an effect that lets me cast a decent creature out of my graveyard, I'm very interested for free. Like, this doesn't, it's not like Gravecrawler where I needed to have a zombie into play. So, like, definitely a card to just always keep an eye out on.
Right.
I think this is just a good card.
For sure.
Marwyn the Nurturer. This is everyone's favorite card for Modern. 2 green, 1/1. Whenever another elf enters the battlefield, under your control, you may put a +1/+1 counter on Marwyn the Nurturer and add that amount of green to your mana pool.
Interesting. So people just think that
it's equal to its power. So
people just think this is a combo. It's a combo piece for elves.
It just goes in elves. It's another Archdruid, and it combos well with the lords and elves because it's power, not how many counters are on it. I misread that.
Interesting.
So at bare minimum, it's tapping for 1 green, and normally it'll tap for more than that.
Interesting. I hadn't even really considered it. It's Marwyn.
Marwyn the Nurturer.
Hmm.
She's got a baby.
Oh, yeah, this card. People love this card. I've seen people talk. It's sweet art, actually.
Yeah. Next, Goblin Chain Whirler. Red. Goblin Warrior. First strike, when Goblin Chain Whirler enters the battlefield, it deals 1 damage to each opponent and each creature that planeswalker that they control. All of these 3-mana whatever guys, the 3 devotion guys, are something to talk about partly because of devotion. I don't think I have the black or the white one in here. Oh, no, I do. They're next. But, yeah, it's a 3/3 for 3 first strike that does... You know, just Rex Elves. I think if Goblins is a deck, this is a sideboard card, and there's like fun, dumb things you can do by giving it Death Touch.
Right.
With the so I don't know, it's interesting.
For sure.
Dreadshade, black, black, black.
It's just rounding out the cycle.
Yeah, the cycle. This is just as fine as what, you know, same reason, just Grey Merchant is the best devotion card ever printed.
I like this card, but I do think that
I think Geralt's Messenger is just better. I think this is the one that there's just better versions of them in
already. Yeah, yeah. And you also can be playing, because this is a 3/3 for 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Nantuko Shade is a
2/2 for 2/1.
It's a 2/1 for 2.
Mm-hmm.
This is better, I think.
Yeah. Benalish Marshal. Never going to say that correctly. White, 3/3. Other creatures you control get +1/+1. This is going to see play in Standard. I don't know if it'll see play in Modern.
No, I don't think so.
Nabon, Dean of Iteration, blue and a colorless. If a wizard enters the battlefield under your control, it triggers the ability of permanent you control. To trigger, that ability triggers an additional time.
We've talked about this now a couple times. I mean, with this card, obviously, with Snapcaster Mage is great. Venser, yep. Vendilion Click. There's a bunch of really good wizards that interact well with this card. I think that the blue-red deck that's playing Wizards Lightning, like, playing a Snapcaster Mage late in the game with this on the battlefield just means, like, okay, I'll give the Wizard's Lightning and the Lightning Bolt Flith Flashback, and I'll 6 you, and game over.
Yeah, I think this card's legit. I think this is part of that deck. So many of the Wizards that are currently seeing play in Modern all have ETB effects that are really good.
Yeah.
Being Snapcaster Mage, Vendilion Click, and then the cards that kind of see play in Modern, like Venser or Sower. Sour Temptation are really good with this. Even some of the fairy cards, like, there's just like different ways that this is abusable.
Agreed.
Multani Yavimaya's Avatar, 4 green, legendary creature, elemental avatar, reach, trample. It gets +1/+1 for each land card in your graveyard and land card you control, so it gets really big. And then green and a colorless, return 2 lands you control to their owner's hands and return it from your graveyard to your hand. The reason this card is relevant to me, beyond the fact that eventually it kind of plays a little bit of a Golgari Grave Troll endgame thing where eventually you get it in the play, it's an engine piece to Seismic Assault decks
for sure.
So like the fact that you can have this in your graveyard, you can even activate it twice in response to itself, so you can return 4 lands to your hand to dome someone for 8,
right?
That deck is just, you know, there's a bunch of pieces for it, and eventually it might get there, and this is definitely a piece that helps accomplish that. And it has the grave troll effect where, like, it's a part of an engine, but then in late game, or if you need to, where you just have 6 mana in play, you can, or 8 lands in play, you can return this to hand and play it, and now you have a, like, 12/12 trampler reach.
Right.
It's just like a beefy dude. Muldrotha the Gravetithe, 3 black, blue, green, legendary creature, elemental avatar. During each of your turns, you may play up to 1 permanent card of each permanent type from your graveyard. It is a 6/6.
This card is nuts.
People have talked about this could be the thing that makes Sultai a thing.
Yeah, I mean, this card's crazy. It's a 6/6 for 6 that, like, which there are so many... What?
The fact that it's a six drop is what hurts it the most.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I just mean that, but like, okay, so you resolve this, like just like you resolve a worm coil engine, and it's like you have a big body. Well, it's not like
worm coil engine is a three drop.
Sure, but but also like I'm not saying. So I'm saying like they could have just as easily made this card a 2/3 for six.
Sure,
and it would still be powerful because the effect would still exist.
Right.
But it's a big body.
Right.
So you cast it, and like you have something you can beat down with. But on top of that, it has insane loop potential built into it.
Plus, you know, if you're playing green, the interest to play some type of ramp spells is there, and this card benefits you for it and is a thing to get to, and then it goes onto a control game plan that's pretty good. I agree. I think it's powerful.
And I mean, like, any kind of value-oriented sack outlet type of thing is crazy. Like, can you imagine if you have a sack outlet, hatching plans, and this card? You just play hatching plans, sack it, draw three cards, play it again, sack it, draw three. Like,
yeah, no, it's definitely a combo engine too. So like, I think it's powerful. Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, 3W. Legendary Planeswalker Teferi, +1, draw a card at the beginning of your next end step, untap 2 lands. A key thing is you have to untap lands, so make sure to tap your lands in response and not untap your opponent's lands. More of a Modo issue. -3, put target non-land permanent into its owner's library, 3rd from the top. And -8, you get an emblem whenever you draw a card, exile target permanent and opponent controls. This might be my new favorite Planeswalker of all time.
It's really powerful.
It's like, it's different than Venser. Its abilities are like, it feels more like Jace than Venser does, where Venser is much more of like a blinky commander.
Yeah.
Its ultimate is pretty much the same. It's less explosive than Venser, but it's probably more consistent and better than Venser.
Yeah.
And it's just really good. I played it at my pre-release. It like, it feels like the fact that you can play it and your choices are either to not let it die by untapping lands and drawing a card and getting removal to kill a thing, or just putting a thing in play 3rd from the top of their opponent's graveyard, is like very powerful.
Yeah, you draw a card, it's at 5. I mean, protects itself. Yeah, I mean, it's really good. It doesn't even, honestly, yeah, you could like set up a deck that's going to ultimate this guy quickly and just like game over. Game over.
And I've been, you know, testing it in standard because, as I mentioned before at the beginning of the podcast, you know, one of my favorite decks is the ramp a lot, play fog effects the deck, and he plays very well into that deck.
I mean, maybe this is just like another reason to try to build that doubling season Jace Architect of Thought deck.
Maybe.
Playing this guy and ultimating him the same turn is just like, okay. So if I untap, you lose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess Jace just wins, but this card's better than Jace on its own.
Jaya Ballard, 2RR. I don't know if that's true, but
better than Architect of Thought on its own.
I don't know if that's true.
Really?
4-drop versus 5-drop. Jaya Ballard is 2RR Jaya Planeswalker. Add 3 red mana to your mana pool. You can only spend on instants and sorceries. Discard up to 3 cards, then draw that many cards. You get an emblem with. You may cast instants or sorcery cards from your graveyard as if they had flashback. Comes in on 5. I don't think this is a thing.
No, I don't think so. I don't think this card's really good.
Let's move on. Naru, Maya, Master Wizard, 2BB. Human Wizard, legendary creature. It has flash. When it enters the battlefield, you may copy target instant or sorcery spell. Other wizards you control get +1/+1. You are higher on this card than I am.
I think this card's sweet. I mean, it costs 4. It's a problem. That's a definite issue. But
it's flash. I mean,
it's a
speed 4-drops is the thing to do,
and it's Wizard Tribal. I mean, like it has real potential. Like the fact that if you're playing some sort of tempo-y Wizards deck, like they're holding this card back is fine. You definitely can 1-for-1. I mean, it's cool.
Getting in with a 4/3 Delver of Secrets. Well, last second,
it does. It's not a.
Oh, it's not a wizard on the other side. It's an insect.
That's why. That's why the whole Delver Wizard thing is like a little dubious.
Well, ish. Okay. Karn Scion of Urza, 4 mana. 5 loyalty, legendary planeswalker Karn. Reveal the top 2 cards of your library. An opponent chooses one of them. Put that card into your hand and exile the other one with a silver counter on it for a +1. -1, you may put a card you own with a silver counter on it from exile into your hand. And -2, create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token with this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control.
Do you think this card's good?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
I've seen people talk about this as maybe the most exciting card in the set, and I played with this card, and I was not that impressed.
Okay.
I thought it was good, but I thought it was a little like, I thought it was a little bit like, all right, so I can make a creature?
You played with it in your sealed pool?
No, I played with it in Brawl.
Oh, in Brawl. Okay.
I had a deck built around like making this card
artifact,
good.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like you feel it's like you make a creature.
But
and
I think that deck is less on board with what this is trying to do, because your deck wasn't your deck was very combo oriented.
Yeah.
And this is like control or aggro, because in Affinity, this is I think this sees play before Thraxos or whatever in Affinity, because you get this into play and then you make a 5/5 token.
Yeah.
You make a cranial plating token.
Yeah.
Just like as up for four. And then from that point on, you get to draw cards, which is really good and needed in Affinity in general.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think in a control deck, it's just a very good card selection engine.
I guess my deck was Joyra was my card engine, so I wasn't trying to draw cards with this.
Yeah, I think that depends on what the deck is.
Yeah.
Speaking of Joyra, Weatherlight Captain, 2 blue red, legendary human artificer, 3/3 whenever you cast a historic spell, draw a card. There has to be a combo that goes with that, right? I mean, you built a combo in Brawl and you had to do it in Singleton.
Yeah, this card's good. I mean, this is the same thing as there's the old 2/2 for 4 in Mirrodin that you draw a card every time you cast an artifact, and that's people have tried to build around that card before. This is just that, but better.
Right.
I mean, it's a 3/3, and it also triggers off more than just artifacts. Though, I think for the context of Modern, sagas and legendaries are irrelevant. I think it's pretty much...
Yeah, I think artifacts... Oh, it depends on what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we didn't talk about any of the legendary sorceries. I think legendary creatures and planeswalkers matter there.
Yeah.
And like, a lot of these we've talked about, planeswalker matters. But for things that are like, you get a trigger if you cast a historic spell, the artifact ones are the way to go off with it versus just like extra value.
Agreed.
History of Benalia. White, colorless, create a 2/2 white knight creature token with vigilance. Do it again on 2, and on 3, knights you control get +2/+1 until end of turn. This is supposed to be the standard card from this set. Like this is the big player in standard. I think it's fine. I think there are 3-mana planeswalkers that do less than this, or 4-mana planeswalkers that do less than this that see play.
I like this card. Yeah.
It's harder to deal with. It comes into play, automatically gets you a 2/2 knight that protects you, and then just keeps going off.
This card jumped out at me for sure. I was
the
impressed.
Art is also spicy.
Yeah.
Last card.
All right.
Only one more. It costs 0. It's a legendary artifact.
And we've talked about it a lot already.
It's Mox Amber. Yeah. You can tap it to add a mana of any color among legendary creatures and planeswalkers you control.
This card's totally interesting to think about. It doesn't really have a home yet. It's pretty hard to break.
I think it makes it tier 2 to 3. I think like there's a lot of cards in here that create tier 3 decks.
Yeah.
I think this does that, but I don't think it... I don't see it doing anything better than that yet.
It will get broken eventually.
Right.
If it's around long enough and people play with it for long enough, it'll just like be a thing. Somebody will find a way eventually, but like there's no obvious interaction right now that makes it really good.
And the point of a Mox is the earlier you get in play, the better. Otherwise, it's just a land late game.
Right.
And so like the only thing I can think of it being relevant in is Zoo decks. And there are these white, red, green, you know, there's enough white, red, and green one drop legendary creatures to consistently have this be just a land.
Yeah, I mean, basically what you're talking about is the value of playing this card is you could get four power on turn one.
Right.
That's pretty much what it looks like, what it comes down to.
Or more than that on turn two. Like, there's stuff it does. So it's definitely a card that will make decks like that playable.
Yep.
Are they good enough? I don't know.
Yeah.
Or consistent enough. And that's it. That's our review of every card.
That's going to do it.
That we think is relevant.
That's going to
wrap it up. Not every card, because there's a bunch of cards we didn't talk about, but those aren't good in Modern.
It was a long episode today. We went for 90 minutes.
Because we weren't on last week, normally the episode we do before this episode is like talk about the mechanics of the set and how we feel about the set so far. And then we do our like card by card review. But I lost some contests that didn't happen. And
you should
so
be
I wasn't able.
You should be very embarrassed.
I'm very embarrassed for my loss.
Yep.
So that's now we're what, 12-1?
Yeah. I'm winning.
I've won 12, you've lost 1.
I think if you run the tape back, you'll see that I'm up.
I think you actually did win 1 week.
Yeah.
I think you won 1 top 10 contest.
You can't, you don't try to get all like...
competitive. All right, everyone, thanks so much for listening. This has been a great episode. I believe most of our shout outs we did. Did we do the Patreon?
We did it early.
Oh, cool. So I think that's it. Make sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and anywhere else you can find us. Make sure to go check out Kess. Make sure to check out the Command Zone. Check out Ben's episode of Game Nights. Do all of those great things. We're at the MMCast everywhere. I'm at Kess Wiley everywhere.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media. And oh, the last thing, just because I didn't mention it, is I do a show called Nerds in Suits. It's a short form audio podcast reviewing all of the new films as they come out. My Infinity War review is up by the time you listen to this. And
next week we'll probably talk about Infinity War.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And
Ben saw it already. I haven't. He's not allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to talk about it. You can check out Nerds and Suits. You can hear news and reviews all the time there. And thanks for listening, guys.
Buy an ice hoop and a drop top ball. Just do it and tweet about it. All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.